This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
With Gene and Chris back at the old stand, a little bit later we'll be talking about magic, the occult, H.P. Lovecraft, and his influence on occultists. I'm going to ask also our guest, John Steadman, about Richard S. Shaver and H.P. Lovecraft. Was there a connection with Shaver's Deros? Well, Shaver thought that Lovecraft knew what was going on. We'll get to that later. Meantime, Chris is back after taking a little time off to try to do some real work. In the meantime, last week we have featured, of course, Dr. Robert Davis and Dr. Marie Batchelor, who is a psychic healer. And I kind of feel bad Chris wasn't able to come on the show. I thought he'd have a lot of insights and important questions. As you know, Chris, we've had tons and tons of responses, especially because I was kind of critical of the psychic healing and the explanations. Have you run into psychic healing at all in the course of your travels?
Yes, I have. Obviously, it's pretty controversial. I think a lot of it boils down to how much an individual who's suffering from something really wants to be healed. I think the power of positive thought in terms of one's health problem, I think is absolutely paramount. So half the battle is you know, wanting to be healed. You know, having been here in the Sedona area for almost 15 years, I worked on several dozen training seminar videos, all different sorts of presentations, dealing with about every modality that you can possibly think of, including soaking your feet and pulling all your toxins out of your balls of your feet.
Well, you know, is that what she was talking about when she said about vibrations coming through my feet when she subjected me to one of her Skype-based psychic healings? Was that what it was about?
Well, yeah, your feet can be used very effectively to pull toxins out of the body. And, you know, once you've been around a lot of this type of kind of alternative health information and stuff for as long as I have, you get a little jaded about some of it, but I think there's something to it. I think I've seen, just to give you an idea of a way that you can, at least I was able to demonstrate the effectiveness, for instance, of chamomile flower essence. My girlfriend in Boston had fallen in love with this lop-eared rabbit. So she bought this dang rabbit, which I told her not to name it because we were going to end up eating it, and she immediately named it. But then we had to rename it because it started doing laps around the coffee table.
And it
Yeah, it was doing laps around the coffee table. Boinky, 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 boinky. And it did this for days. It wouldn't stop. So, you know, it was a lop, so we had to call him. We renamed him Lap. Lap the Lop. It was just finally, it was just driving me nuts. This thing was going to, you know, die from exhaustion. So we took a little bit of flower essence and rubbed it on its nose, you know, chamomile, which is supposedly going to be calming. And we put some in the water, and he just sat there for a second and never did another lap. So Lap learned how not to do laps.
You had not a lap dog, but a lap rabbit.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting here. Our dog, Teddy Bear, whom you know, he's hung around you. Bichons are known to do that kind of thing where suddenly they'll start scurrying or doing laps around the room at a very fast pace. But they only do it for a few seconds at a time. It's like our dog wants to be the Flash or something.
Right.
But it has to be in a certain kind of playful mood, where it just gets so excited, it has to let off steam. That happens maybe every few days. I should really take a picture of it and put it up in the forums. I think people might like it. In any case here, what I'm seeing from what you're telling me about psychic healing, it's not the practitioner so much, except insofar as they put you into a state where you can let your own abilities, whatever they are, mind over matter, whatever, engage in advancing the healing process.
Well, I think a lot of it does boil down to being open for healing. But I think the practitioner has a lot to do with it as well. To take it to the next level, you need a practitioner who is well versed in the particular modalities that they're, you know, operating with. And there are many different ways to, you know, look at a particular health issue. It can be looked at from many different ways, from many different perspectives, utilizing the knowledge and educational awareness of many different modalities. So, you know, I think some are more suited for certain types of maladies. Others are, I think, more suited for others. So there you go.
But again, it requires some input from the practitioner. Is it simply putting you in the proper state of mind to allow healing to commence?
Well, it depends. It depends on what it is that is being done, number one. I think in some cases where stuff is potentially psychosomatic, yeah, I think it's really important to get that kind of mindset going. And I think that's really important. But again, I think a lot of it's hinging on exactly what it is that you're attempting to accomplish in terms of healing. So yeah, I will be interested to listen to the show. I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, but thanks to Erica. Well, actually, I don't think Erica helped you with the show, did she? I think she was on the after the.
She was on after the PowerCast. I would have loved to have her on. I think she's one of our best guest co-hosts. She's really masterful at the way she does it, because she's a counterpoint to me. I'm the skeptical journalist, and she probes very gently. And I think she works that way with either of us, and I think it was good, but she wasn't available for that.
Mm-hmm.
She was available for after the PowerCast while I gave my observations. My concern here is that, not that Marie Batchelor is not a nice woman, and, you know, we know that she went through tragedy because her 4-year-old child was struck by a vehicle and she witnessed that. It has to be the worst thing that happens in your life. And I guess underwent this kind of epiphany or revelation in the years following. And I guess she was trying to refine herself again. And she got into this. My problem with it is that when she tries to explain what's going on, it's just word salad. As if she really doesn't know, and I don't think a lot of people do, they try to find an answer. She could say it's vibrations and higher beings. Others can say they're in touch with someone's dead relative or with God or something else. I don't think those explanations have any meaning. I don't think they matter in the scheme of things, why it happens. But certainly if someone can put you in a state where you can relax and it helps the healing process, I see nothing wrong with that. Because I think if a person lacks the will to live, especially if they're very sick, all that will do is make it more difficult for them to recover. I can tell you some stories about my late brother-in-law when he was in Mayo Clinic in Scottsdale. And the way they treated him in his last days was, I thought, reprehensible. But I don't want to get into the politics of that. You know, I wish that on nobody, even the people I hate. Well, maybe there are a couple of people I worry about. In any case, we mentioned after the PowerCast, which is part of our PowerCast Plus package. You get it exclusively if you subscribe to PowerCast Plus at plus.theparacast.com. That's plus.theparacast.com. We'll talk more about that later. Right now we have coming up, John L. Steadman. He's author of a book called H.P. Lovecraft and the Black Magical tradition. More to come with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items, and entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. InjuryHelpDesk.com is responsible for this advertisement. Principal office, Las Vegas, Nevada.
Attention! If you or a loved one had a total or reverse shoulder replacement between 2011 and 2016 and suffered serious complications, including dislocation and loosening, you may be entitled to substantial compensation. Evidence indicates that these devices can dislocate and loosen, causing severe pain, and may require additional revision surgery. If you or a loved one had a total or reverse shoulder replacement and suffered a dislocation and loosening requiring a revision, call 800-598-0696. If you or a loved one had a total or reverse shoulder replacement between 2011 and 2016 and suffered serious complications, including dislocation and loosening, you may be entitled to substantial compensation. Time is limited to file a claim. Act now. For more information and a free consultation, call 800-598-0696. That's 800-598-0696. Again, that's 800-598-0696. Call now.
Have you ever wanted a shortcut to getting the underground secrets to making money online and seriously grow your business? Whether it's a new business, a part-time income, or an existing business, you have this incredible limited offer to get a copy of this Amazon best-selling book on .com success for free. Uncover the success factors to make your business ignite. Go to secretsignite.com. That's secretsignite.com. Get your free copy now. Go to secretsignite.com.
Hey, diabetics. Yeah, you. Got a spare hour to waste going to the pharmacy to get your insulin or other meds and supplies every month? I didn't think so. Me either. I've got life going on, which is why I use PillPack. PillPack is an amazing online pharmacy. They package up all my diabetic meds and testing supplies into daily doses and send it to me every month, automatically. All I do is pay my normal copay. PillPack does the rest. I'm serious. This is a free service. They don't even charge for shipping. PillPack handles all the medical insurance stuff and even get with my doctors for my other prescriptions, so I don't have to, which is good because that's the stuff I forget. But PillPack remembers everything. They even package up my daily vitamins, so I remember to take them too. If you're diabetic, your meds and supplies are life and death, which means you need PillPack. Call right now for this free service. You may even qualify for $25 in free vitamins. 800-560-7310. That's 800-560-7310. Again, 800-560-7310.
Many medicines used to treat colds and flu contain acetaminophen, a pain reliever and fever reducer found in hundreds of over-the-counter and prescription medicines. But taking too much or more than one medication containing acetaminophen per day can damage your liver. So always read the label and don't take acetaminophen if you drink three or more alcoholic drinks every day. To learn more, visit fda.gov/OTC pain info. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Food and Drug Administration.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
So I should say here that we ran into a few Skype glitches, but we are finally talking to our guest. John L. Stedman is author of H.P. Lovecraft and the Black Magical Tradition. And I noticed the name of the publisher, Red Wheel Weiser, is that a descendant of the original Samuel Weiser bookstore?
Yeah, it sure is. You know, when I was a young kid going to undergraduate university at Michigan State University, they were the number one New Age publishers. They didn't call it New Age publishing back then. They called it a cult or magic. But that's a descendant of that original Samuel Weiser. I have a ton of books in my library from the 70s that they put out.
Well, even before then, I would visit their store in New York City. I go to the basement, and they had all the closeout books there. You know, I couldn't afford as a teenager to spend, you know, $15 for a book or something like that. So for $2, I buy a new UFO book. Or for maybe $3, $4, I buy a magazine. And I kept myself abreast of all the power and all the subjects. And I basically, instead of doing homework sometimes, after school, I'd run over there for a couple of hours and hang.
Gosh, you know, I wish I could have had access to a place. I used to have to drive to Ann Arbor. They had a New Age bookstore in Ann Arbor, and they carried all those books there, you know. But it would have been nice to actually have that bookstore or the Magic Child bookstore they used to have in New York City in the 60s. You know, I would have loved to have been able to go into places like that.
I think it's still there.
Is it really? Magic Child?
The Magical Child, yeah. I'm pretty sure it is.
I'll be darned. I'll be darned. I thought they went out of business a long time ago, you know, with, I think, what was his name, Barnes, a guy that used to run it. I thought they went out, like, in the 60s, but it's still there.
It was still going in the 80s. I know that. I lived in New York till 87. They were there till the mid to late 80s, at least.
Magical Child Bookstore, 35 West 19th Street, New York, New York, between Fifth Avenue and Avenue of the Americas.
Yeah, it was in my own neighborhood. It's still there, right?
It's still there, it says.
Pretty niche, you know. Barnes & Noble's not going to put an operation like that out of business. There are too many rare books and books that really don't have a wide appeal.
But that must have been fun. So how did you get involved in looking into the works of H.P. Lovecraft? Because I see here you kind of started much the way I did, as a fan of horror, fantasy, and sci-fi. So did you ever have any interest in the occult at that point, or did this come after you got interested in Lovecraft?
Well, what I was always interested in things like monsters and ghosts and supernatural things when I was a kid in elementary school and in middle school, too. And I used to read books like Famous Monsters. You remember Famous Monsters of Filmland? I used to collect that.
Okay. All right. And you read Famous Monsters of Filmland, Forrest J. Ackerman, the editor. He came to my home one time.
Oh, did he really? Wow.
Oh, yeah. He came to my home one time. This had to be in the early or mid-1960s. And what he did is he was taking a trip around the country. And he'd visit the home of readers. And he'd choose from among those who wrote him. So I said the right things. I was living in Brooklyn, New York. And I set up the place to have, you know, lunch. We had five or six people invited over. And I set up a table in the living room, like a talk radio studio with multiple microphones and a pair of tape recorders. So I actually taped the thing. I don't have the tape anymore, folks. Sorry. You would have loved to have heard me when I was 17 years old. Or maybe you wouldn't. I have no idea. But I got to know Forrest J. Ackerman there, and I met him on a few more occasions. I never visited the Acker Mansion, though, in L.A.
Boy, what a memory.
As you get older, you'll see this.
Well, friend of the show, Paul Davids, recently was part of a ceremony to name a boulevard in L.A. after him. And they just had a celebration of his life.
Well, that's how I got into, you know, the monster magazines. And I kind of would read horror stories. I liked Edgar Allan Poe and writers like that. And I kind of just gravitated toward Lovecraft by accident. I was at a bookstore, and there was this paperback that had like a red skull on the cover that looked like it was on fire and a dark background. It was a fiction of H.P. Lovecraft. I never heard of him before, but I bought the book mainly because of that cover. You know, I figured the stories had to be really good if they had a cover like that. Back at that time, I was reading a lot of horror and ghost stories, and they didn't really affect me that much because you get kind of desensitized to them. But I remember the first time I read The Color Out of Space, and it gave me chills up and down my spine. And that was like when I was in middle school. It was a beautiful sunny day when I was reading that, you know, and I figured that this must be the real thing if it can have that kind of an effect on me, you know. So then I was hooked on Lovecraft, and then from there I gravitated toward the occult as people probably do when they get into the magic and the supernatural and the ghosts and horror first, and they kind of move toward the more new age sort of thing because they want kind of hands-on experience, I guess, what they call it. They don't just want to read about it.
Now, of course, obviously, most of our listeners know that Lovecraft was a writer of fiction. So how does the trip go from being interested in the fictional writer to looking at magic, the occult, in terms of fact?
Well, it seemed like a natural progression to me to do that, you know, but I don't know. I guess there are fans out there that just like the science fiction and horror, and they don't feel the need to go to that different level there, that different direction. But I did for some reason, so I really can't compare it to anything. I can't really analyze why I went that direction, why other people went other direction, but I did. I just went that direction, basically. I think a lot of the things that helped me in that direction were that I kept seeing Lovecraft being associated with the occult for some reason. Like, back in those days, you had the Satanic Bible. Do you remember the Satanic Bible, Anton LaVey?
Sure.
In the 1966, he declared the Age of Satan, and then the Satanic Bible came out, and then the Satanic Rituals came out, and he had a section in the Satanic Rituals on Lovecraft, the metaphysics of Lovecraft, and there were rituals in there. And then you would see stuff on TV, like they used to have this Night Gallery TV show. Remember that? Rod Serling did after the Twilight Zone. And they had a couple
called.
Yeah. Well, they had a couple vignettes on Lovecraft and Clark Ashton Smith, and so it all kind of seemed to be part of the whole same thing, you know. So then there was rituals being done, and then, of course, Simon's book came out, Simon's Necronomicon came out, so it kind of seemed like other people were kind of associating Lovecraft with occultism, and I was seeing Lovecraft being associated with occultism. I guess it must have been all those things together that kind of moved me in that direction, but I really don't know. I've never really analyzed why I've been fascinated with magic and New Age themes.
Did you actually ever have any experiences yourself that were paranormal or UFO related?
Yeah, I did. Now, I did get into magic. What I'm doing now is putting together a magical grimoire for the last 30 or so years. We see various rituals over those periods of time and perform them with my magical assistants. And I'm putting together a grimoire of all those rituals now. That'll be my third book. My two main books so far is this one that you've got that I sent you that's been published, and I've got a follow-up book to this where I explore Lovecraft's development, what I call the magical persona, and I show how he was influenced by former writers toward that, and then how his view of the magical persona is quite a bit different, quite a bit more complex, and then how that's inspired future generations.
We have John Steadman on H.P. Lovecraft, Magic, the Occult, and more. With Gene and Chris, you're in
The Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
The answer to being in control of your own health care is freedom from insurance. Become part of a group of self-pay patients that come together to share in each other's medical expenses. Individual share amounts begin at $107 a month and $347 for families. Choose from three health-sharing programs. Holistic treatments may be eligible for sharing. See guidelines. Discount programs available for dental, vision, and pharmacy. Go to libertyoncall.org. That's libertyoncall.org.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and sling bows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com. Are you happy washing your hands with harsh chemicals? Are you happy doing laundry with detergents? Are you happy paying high prices? Find your happiness with Pure Soap. These all-natural, earth-friendly Pure Soaps are the very best you've ever used. Buy in bulk. Get a 12, 36, or 48-month supply. Or get items individually and still save big. You're getting soap products twice as good as what you're using now. Earth-friendly and natural soaps. Your family deserves the best. Happiness is 5starsoap.com. Why not put your money up the drain for a change? See them at 5starsoap.com or call 1-800-340-7091 for a catalog. Calvin's Soap Company can save you thousands of dollars and give you good old-fashioned real soaps that are triple concentrated. Soaps made from vegetable and coconut oils. See their full selection of soaps at 5starsoap.com. That's FiveStarSoap.com. Or call 1-800-340-7091 for a catalog.
Hi, Peter Vaccaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com, ParanormalDate.com, and use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
All right, guys, we're ready for our four-season sunroom, and Daddy's gonna get a rec room with refreshments.
Oh, no, we'll be sleeping under the stars.
Mom, what about the one with, you know, the fun?
Nice try, little bro. It's a gym. My gym.
Hey, Grandma's getting her Four Seasons garden room, weather-tight and still like being outdoors.
Maybe a living room. Oh, no, wait, a family hub.
Yeah!
No matter what the budget, the season, or the climate, Four Seasons Sunrooms let you and your family enjoy the outdoors inside. Call now to hear more about these great offers from the premier manufacturer of sunrooms since 1975.
More reasons for Four Seasons now.
To find out more, call toll-free 800-848-6333. That's 800-848-6333.
This is Leslie Kane, and I'm with the Coalition for Freedom of Information, and you are listening to the Paracast.
As you see, Chris adopts a very under-earth kind of voice for that stinger. John Steadman joining us, and he's telling us about his early interest in H.P. Lovecraft, the fiction, and then, of course, navigating to the facts. And then we're getting into your personal experiences, which you can go on with.
Okay, well, I've had a lot of magical experience, and that'll be in the Grimoire, of course, and we'll talk about that later, or not at all, but I'll talk about my things. I guess I had two experiences that weren't magical because I wasn't in any kind of intellectual decompression situation where I was actually creating there and making it available. And so these happen just the way they would happen to just any normal person. It's not a magical practitioner. So I have to assume that they're paranormal. One of them's paranormal and one of them's UFO. The paranormal one is kind of weird. We used to go up to Clare, Michigan, and we'd stay at this cottage on Lake 13. And I remember this only happened up there, but my mom and dad were both alive then. And what we'd do, there were like two bedrooms there, and one bedroom had two beds, and my dad would sleep in one, I would sleep in the other. And then the other bedroom across these all kind of led on the main living room. And then in the other bedroom, my twin brother would sleep in that, and then our grandparents would sleep in the other one. And my mom, there was no place for her to sleep, so she'd sleep on the sofa in the living room. Now, it was a very big living room. It would get fearfully dark at night up there. They didn't have any street lights or anything like that. She would lay down on that sofa there, and she would fall asleep. And this is really weird. This only happened to me each in the evenings when we were living there. But everybody would be asleep, right? And I'd be sleeping in the bedroom. And for some reason, I would always wake up sometime after midnight. I'd just always wake up. And then I would go to the foot of the bed, and I'd look out into the living room. And I'd see my mom laying there on the sofa. I'd see her shape. Now, there was like a night light in there, so it was very dim. You couldn't see anything, but you could just make out shapes. But then it was really weird. I'd be watching her, And then suddenly it seemed like she was getting out of her body or something. It was her getting out of the body, and I could see like a kind of a bright white outline around the shape of her, but I could see through the shape of her. And she, what she would do, she would leave the sofa and she'd go over to a rocking chair. There was a rocking chair out there in front of the fireplace. And then she would start to rock. Her shape was still there, but then this was simulacrum or whatever it was rocking in the rocking chair. And then I'd be watching it, and then suddenly she would notice me, and then she would start walking. She would get up and start walking toward me with her arms out. And she had a really, I could see through her, but she had a really evil or kind of weird look on her face, one that I'd never seen when she was awake. It used to terrify me, you know, and then I'd go back and lay down. And what she would do, she'd walk like up to the door of the room, and then she would disappear, and she'd be back in the rocking chair. And one time I felt unusually brave, and so instead of going back to bed, I actually got up, and she saw me, and then she was walking toward me. I walked right toward her. I was actually trembling. I was scared to death. I was about 13 years old, and I was walking toward her, and then when we almost met, she disappeared. She wasn't anywhere in the room, but the rocking chair was still moving. And then I walked over to the rocking chair, and I reached out and put my hand on it, and then it stopped. And now I wanted to test that one time. I was thinking, well, maybe I'm just imagining this. And so one night I changed beds with my brother. And my brother's room was looking out into that living room also, but from a little different angle. And he never would wake up, of course. He would sleep like a rock when he fell asleep. So he was in my old room. And then I woke up one night, and it was the same time as usual. I woke up the same time after midnight. And then I saw her out in the chair again, but I was seeing her from a different view, like she was sitting at an angle. And then I saw her walking toward the room. Now, you'd think if it was imaginary that she would walk directly toward me because I was imagining it, right? But she didn't do that. She was walking directly toward that room. I saw her from the side view, and then she would disappear. And this would happen quite frequently when we went on vacation up to Lake 13. Never happened anywhere else. I never saw anything like that again. And I don't know if it's paranormal because she wasn't dead. You could say maybe it was like an astral body or something, or a projection. Whatever it was, I guess I'd have to consider that to be a paranormal. It's certainly a paranormal experience. I don't know if the ghost hunters would call it that, but that's what I called it.
Chris, you wanted to ask something?
Maybe she had some sort of spectral evil twin that didn't survive the birth process or something.
Well, I don't know where it was. She was a very nice woman, you know, but that was my, that I guess what I'd have to call a paranormal experience. I did have a UFO experience up in Clare, Michigan, too. This was during the UFO craze when I was in high school, just in my last year in high school. You want, do we have time to talk about that?
Sure, we got plenty of time.
Okay, well, this was an odd experience. My brother was into UFOs. He read all the books. You know, remember those books? You mentioned you drop into the Weiser bookstore and pick up a book on UFOs or a magazine. Well, you remember the kind of books they had back then. They had, like, Frank Edwards, something about flying saucers. They had Adamski's books about saucer contact. The Interrupted Journey, I think, with Barney Bayhill. They had those kind of books out. You know, my brother was really interested in UFOs, and he had a good friend who was interested in UFOs, too. Yeah, well, we were out there at the swampy area, and we were just driving around, and then suddenly my friend had one of those original little Volkswagen things. Remember those things? You know, they were really terrible on the highway. They'd really shake when you got up to about 60 miles per hour. But we were
That's
riding
the
around
the Volkswagen Beetle, right.
And we, there was suddenly something in front of us, and it was like hovering along the ground. Now, it was kind of misty out there, and we couldn't really see it. But it was hovering, and it was moving as fast as we would. Like, we would move, and it would move at about the same speed. And it definitely wasn't like a motorcycle or a bike or a car or anything like that. It had, like, a little row of lights, but it was just a little bit off the ground, like maybe 4 feet off the ground, and it was just hovering there. And so we started chasing the thing, and we could never catch up to it. We'd go so far, and it would just keep pace with us. It had perfect control of itself, you know, so we couldn't catch up with it. When we increased our speed, it would increase its speed when we slowed down. So it just kind of stayed even with us. And then at one point, my friend was driving, my brother's friend, and he stopped the car. And then he got out. We all got out of the car, and we left the lights on. And he had a flashlight. And so he walked to the front of his car, and then he kind of flashed his light. He clicked it like twice, the flashlight. And then the thing blinked twice. And then he tried it three times. and it did the same thing. It blinked three times. And then he wanted to try something different, so he kind of spun the, it was one of those old-fashioned flashlights they used to have, and then he spun the light around, and then it suddenly made a whirring sound, you know, so I guess that was its equivalent of what he was doing. But then we got back in the car, and then we were trying to pursue it some more, but then it kind of vanished. And then I went back home. They dropped me off. We were staying at a hotel, and they dropped me off at the hotel. And when they came back, they were driving up and down the roads for another hour or so, but there was nothing else there. So I guess I'd have to say that was like a UFO experience. At least it was an unidentified flying object, that's for sure, you know, but there was no explanation for that at all.
No,
I can't.
Now, what year is this, 60s?
No, this was, yeah, around, actually around 72, 71 or 72.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, there was quite a bit of activity in the upper Midwest in 71, 72, and then it all just exploded in 73.
Yeah, I don't know. Those two things, that little ghost thing of my mom and the UFO, those are the only two experiences I've had that could be classified as paranormal or UFO, and I have no explanation for any of those, you know. So I don't know if that's of any interest to your readers or not. I don't know what any of it means, but it was certainly interesting.
Just having an experience is enough for some people, even if it's only one or two. That's more than most people have, and certainly your UFO experience is a lot more than most people who even see UFOs have. Mostly it's just a light in the sky that does nothing. Fact is, the closest thing I ever saw to a UFO must have happened sometime in the 1960s. And once again, I saw light in the sky, and it seemed to be moving slowly, and then it seemed to speed up before it disappeared. But there was nothing distinctive enough there to indicate this was anything but something conventional.
Yeah. Well, what it's done for me, it's opened my mind. You know, of course, all my magical experiences have opened my mind even further, but it's opened my mind. You know, I'm perfectly willing to accept anything. You know, if a person can give me some, if they're telling the truth and they're giving me some, they're being accurate about or being honest or objective about, you know, I can believe it. You know, I don't see the point of closing your mind to things. I've never understood that.
We have more to come with John Steadman and Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Neighbors, I want to tell you about my favorite graphics app. It's the award-winning Graphic Converter. You know, Graphic Converter is the universal genius for photo editing on your Mac. Join over 1.5 million loyal users for this Swiss Army knife photo editing app. It gives you all you expect from a top-flight image editing app with tons of features, and most important, it's easy to use. It's also far less expensive than that other app that you can only get by subscription. You know the one I'm talking about. What's more, you can get 20% off with your order right now. So write this down to learn about Graphic Converter. Go to www.lemkesoft.de/gene. Let me spell that. www.lemkesoft.de/gene.
This is Dan Pillett. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
Are you looking to become more self-sufficient? Then you need to have your own energy source. The Solark EMP hardened generator is automatic, maintenance-free, and reduces your monthly electric bill. You can also take it off-grid when you go camping. Contact PortableSolarLLC.com or call for details at 972-575-8875 today. Portable Solar LLC gives you everything you need to start using solar energy in less than 1 hour. Solark EMP hardened solar generator energy insurance for your family or business. Call Portable Solar LLC today.
In these uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable. For the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA, go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
Imagine what it's like to be active your whole life and then find out you're going blind. That's what happened to me. I have age-related macular degeneration, or AMD. As a wife, mother, and grandmother, my sight is precious to me. What a relief when I found out that treatments for some forms of AMD are available and that research is underway on additional preventions and treatments. AMD is the leading cause of vision loss in people 55 and over. When I started seeing blurry spots in the middle of my eye, I saw my doctor. She suggested I review the prevention and treatment information on fightblindness.org. Did you know that some forms of AMD can be slowed down or stopped, and in some cases reversed if found in time? Get more information about preserving your vision. Call the Foundation Fighting Blindness today at 1-800-BLINDNESS for a free packet on reversing or managing AMD. Or go to the website where I found so much helpful information. Fightblindness.org. 1-800-BLINDNESS. 1-800-254-6363. Or fightblindness.org.
You've been hearing Dr. Wallach talking about 90 essential nutrients, keeping the body healthy. GCNteam.com now has Beyond Tangy Tangerine Tablets, 60 plant-derived minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, packed in a powerful tablet. But that's not it. 160,000 auric points, a knockout punch to free radicals. Call 877-878-4203 or go to GCNteam.com. That's 877-878-4203.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
We'll join John Stedman talking about the magic of H.P. Lovecraft and his personal experiences, magical UFOs, and all that in a moment. I want to mention again our second radio show after the Paracast, available only if you subscribe to the Paracast Plus. For more information, go to plus, P-L-U-S dot theparacast.com. That's plus dot theparacast.com. We also give you a commercial-free version of this show and other benefits. I'm going to be putting up some more of those classical episodes from 2010 and later, ad-free, over the next few weeks. So that's going to be interesting. Plus, theparacast.com. Prices start just $1.49 a week. How about that? So we're talking here about the experiences that set John Stedman on an interesting path. And you mentioned multiple magical experiences. Can you tell us some more?
Yeah, I can go into that very easily. By the way, this book is designed for fans of science fiction, horror, and fantasy who really have heard a lot that Lovecraft may be a practicing magician or an unconscious magician or whatever, and that he might have been involved in the occult. And this book was written specifically to address that issue. And what I like about the book is it not only explains what Lovecraft knew and how much he knew about magic, and it clears the record, so to speak, but it also actually gives you a real, and I've had a lot of people email me about this or talk to me about this, where the latter half of the book, I look at his influence on the main Western black magical systems.
Yeah, and, but I wanted to ask you about your experiences first, and then we can go more into the book, okay?
Yeah. Well, my experiences, when I first started out with magic, I was in high school, and I did pretty conventional rituals. I would do them just like all those old grimoires, like the Key of Solomon. They had pretty set rules about how to do magic, how to set up the circles, how to make the kinds of weapons that you use, the wand, the sword, the cup, and the pentacle. And then they have different evocations or invocations. And I used to do those things. I would do them, and I would get the results I was supposed to get. I remember I did an evocation of a Bart Sabell one time. Bart Sabell is the spirit of Mars. It was an outdoor temple, and it was all set up the way you'd expect it to be set up, to kind of appeal to the Martian kind of atmosphere. And I had two magical assistants with me, and these are the same assistants that I used for my more Lovecraftian rituals, too. But I started out with the more standard Western rituals, and we actually did evoke the spirit of Bart Sabell. I mean, it appeared in a triangle like it was supposed to, and we could actually communicate with it. We could all see it and stuff. But what bothered me about this experience with Bart Sabell is that it was like a stage kind of a thing. You know, it appeared just the way I thought it would appear. It did the kind of things I thought. And I kept thinking in the back of my mind, gee, is this an actual real entity that I'm in touch with here? Is this just something I created in my mind that I kind of brought out? And I really could not answer that question. And I wasn't really quite satisfied with the magical results. It didn't seem genuine to me. And then a couple years later, I started using the Lovecraftian rituals. I was inspired by Anton LaVey's rituals. And then I started writing my own rituals, my own inspirational rituals. And then when I started working with those rituals, it was quite a difference. You know, I had no doubts when I did my own rituals that I was actually in touch with something that was just not a projection for me. There was something out there. Now, whether I could actually understand what I was seeing or not, or whether my perceptions were just clouded by the way I'd been conditioned to see things, I don't know about that, but I had immediate conviction that what I was doing was actually hooking up to actual extraterrestrial or supernatural or supranatural, however you want to describe it, interdimensional, however you want to describe these entities. I had no doubts that I was actually in touch with things that were not just projections inside of me. And then at that point onward, I just worked with the Lovecraftian entities.
Okay, so the point being here is you're not assuming any particular explanation for this stuff. You're just saying, this is what happened and I don't know.
Well, I can't really, because there's no way to empirically prove. I can't really prove the ontological existence of anything that I deal with. You know, I really can't. We don't have any mechanism for measuring that. We don't have any mechanism for measuring magic, you know, whether magic works, you know, so I can't really account for it. Now, magical practitioners have their own theories about what's going on. And a lot of them claim that you're doing something on the astral plane, you're manipulating ether, or you're accessing through kind of a pseudo time, you're accessing things that already exist on the astral plane, like gods, demons, or spirits, or something like that. And they can have any kind of explanation they want for this kind of thing. The problem is that there's no way to empirically verify it. So I can't really prove anything that's happening. You know, so I try and leave my definitions of what I think is going on, I kind of leave it at the door, basically. And what I'm interested in is if I do a magical experience and I gain some kind of knowledge or power, which is what gnosis is, magical experience, and then I have some kind of outcome or some kind of result, you know, then that's all I really care about. It's like when you go and you turn on the switch, the electric switch, right? You don't have to know circuit breakers or what goes on the lines outside your house or A, B, or DC circuits or whatever nonsense like that. All you want to do is turn the switch on. If the lights come on, that's your objective, right? Well, that's the way I've been viewing magic over the years. You know, if I get some kind of result and I'm satisfied with it, then I'm fine with that.
Now, obviously, people who have heard about what magicians can do may see magicians at work on fictional TV shows like Once Upon a Time, or The Magicians, which is an interesting TV show.
I think what he's referring to is actually practicing high magic in the Western esoteric tradition.
What I'm saying to you is you have TV shows here that pretend magic, people altering their realities, creating spells, that kind of thing.
Magicians do that sort of thing. We do spells. We do spells, and those are for immediate results. The only difference is usually in those magical shows. Now, I haven't watched The Magicians, but I've watched, like, shows. I saw Doctor Strange, that movie, Doctor Strange,
right,
the other day. That is an interesting movie, but that's very similar to a lot of the magical movies, too, because that one, they actually do manipulate the astral plane, so they're actually, and they can manipulate time. They can't really manipulate real time, because there is no such thing as real time. I mean, we all live in the present. We can think about the past or the future, but we can't really go there. We have to go into some kind of pseudo-time, and they kind of hit that a little bit in Doctor Strange. They have, like, little different dimensions, like the mirror dimension and stuff, and then he does manipulate time at the end of it. And so magicians do cast spells, and they do those sorts of things, but you notice the thing they always leave out of it, and this is central to magical practice, and they always always lead this out of those kind of magic movies or TV shows, and the Harry Potter ones, too. I mean, they do spells there, and sometimes they put them in kind of Latin, and they wave the wand. So it's kind of similar, but they always leave the extraterrestrial entities out. And those are actually the engine or the fuel of the magical ritual. I define magic as the use of language, gestures, symbolic objects, and stylized settings for achieving contact with extraterrestrial entities.
Well, first of all, let's look at that definition of magic. I think the accepted, I guess, definition, at least in my experience, would be magic is causing change and conformity to will.
Yeah, that's Aleister Crowley's definition. And you know what's funny about that? Aleister Crowley does say that, but think about that definition for a minute. He's saying change to conform your will. Like right now I'm picking up a piece of paper, right? So it's my will to pick up the paper, and I've changed it. I picked up the paper. I could crumble the paper up, right? So when I pick up a paper and crumble it up, I'm affecting change and conform your will, right? That's a very broad definition. And secondly, if you look at Aleister Crowley, despite that definition, when he did magic, he was always interested in achieving contact with extraterrestrial entities. That was the engine for all of his magic. That's where the Book of the Law came from. That fueled all of his magical powers.
Let's talk about Lamb, the
about
first
who?
Depiction of a gray, big-headed gray alien, I think, would be the sketch that he drew in 19...
Lamb, yeah, Lamb. I didn't catch it from it. Yeah, Lamb. Some people associate that with Aleister Crowley's higher self or holy guardian angel. But look at that. Like, he says the first thing, and he has a very narrow definition in the book Magic, by the way, despite the change in conformity of will. If you read further into that book, his definition is the primary magical ritual is to achieve contact with your higher self, or he called it the holy guardian angel. That's an extraterrestrial entity. And you'll find that all magical practices, I don't care who they are, they could be chaos magicians, they could be voodoos, they could be Typhonian people, they could be the Wiccans, they could be any number of different magical groups of Satanists. It always boils down to achieving contact with some kind of extraterrestrial entity.
This is more than I usually expect when we have a discussion of this nature. Okay,
yeah,
you're talking about extraterrestrial entities, in which case let's source this and see why you think this is so. And let's do that in our next segment, okay? Because this is obviously going to be a wide-ranging kind of subject here. We're talking to John Steadman, and he's got a fascinating book about magic. But now he's telling us when you get involved in magic, you're in touch with E.T.? More to come with Gene and Chris. You're in?
Yeah, let's...
John, Chris has to end it. With Gene and Chris, you're in?
The Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I'm here to tell you about GCNTelecare.com, a team of board-certified doctors assisting you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Within 15 minutes of registration, care your family can afford. Revolutionizing the healthcare industry, virtual consulting providing diagnosis of non-emergency medical issues by phone or secure video on computer or smart mobile devices. GCNTelecare.com. Virtual care anywhere.
We use cell phones against our heads every day. But now, a landmark U.S. government study confirms increased health risks from exposure to EMF radiation emitted from these devices. The time to protect yourself is now. The solution is Defender Shield. Proudly made in the USA, Defender Shield blocks virtually 100% of EMF radiation emitted from cell phones, tablets, and laptops. Buy now at DefenderShield.com. Use discount code DEFENDER for 10% off. DefenderShield.com, the worldwide leader in EMF radiation protection.